In your bulletin, there is a little green slip of paper which has a quote from William Barclay out of his from his commentary on Corinthians, 1 Corinthians. I just want to read a portion of this. I thought he captured well this nature of the concern that Paul had. You may remember from last week. And we heard it again in the first part of our reading. Paul didn't want the gospel to be preached in a way that would empty the cross of its power, that lest the cross be made void. And so Paul goes on then to tell us what it is that gives the cross its power, and I thought Barclay did a good job of summarizing that. The one basic sin is self-assertion, or the desire for recognition. It is only when we realize that we can do nothing and that God can and will do everything that real religion begins. It is the amazing fact of life that it is the people who realize their own weakness and their own lack of wisdom who in the end are strong and wise. It is the fact of experience that the one who thinks that they can take life all by themselves is certain in the end to make shipwreck. Well, you may debate whether or not that's a fact of experience. But I think what I liked about this is it's easy to see why this was nonsense and or offensive. Because it does sound like foolishness, doesn't it? Imagine yourself as a coach, and you come in and to your team. You say, okay, you guys are going to do a lot better when you realize that you can't do anything, that you're good for nothing. Or imagine trying to teach a class that way. As soon as you know you can't learn and it's impossible to learn, well, we'll get along just fine. You'll be learning well. But I leave this for you, encouraging you to take this home. I think just that brief summary statement, if you allowed it and if you put it somewhere where you could find it a week from now or 2 weeks from now, and if you allowed it to just sort of begin to work in you, in your heart and mind, it would have the potential to bring you back in touch with this power that the cross has. Our understanding, I mean, you can read it and understand it right now, but the understanding that's going to be transformative doesn't come from just a simple read and understanding of the English terms. It requires instead a mulling over and a meditating, a renewing of the concept and beginning to see your life in light of that and asking that God would reveal his truth to you. So I love this passage from Corinthians, and it's extremely important in a formative part of my life as a young man, as I was beginning as an adult to begin a journey with God through Jesus Christ. But as I was preparing for this week, as I was preparing for the sermon today, I was drawn back to the psalm, and I want to talk from the psalm today, Psalm 27. It's usually problematic to preach from the psalms, and so I don't do that very frequently, but today I wanted to do that. And I wanted to do it for a couple of reasons. One is because it's my opportunity to give a testimony to who God is and what he has done in my life. But it's also an opportunity for us to get inside the mind and heart of an individual of whom God said, "This is a man after my own heart." Now, if you were an artist, a painter, let's say, and you wanted to enhance and develop your own skill, assuming you've got some skill and some basic training, you might go and look at some masters. You might look at their artwork, go to museums. You might get in close and back. You look at a painting. You go, well, that's really amazing what Michelangelo was able to accomplish here, or Rembrandt, or Van Gogh. And I wonder how they got, you know, I wonder how they brought out that technique. How did they make this person seem so alive, or this, whatever the subject matter is? And that's sort of, we can learn a lot from that external look. We might also then have privilege or access to interviews or commentary from the artist themselves, perhaps an autobiography or people writing about the life they lived with the artist. And we might begin to learn from them as well as they began to talk about where they got inspiration for ideas or who they studied with, and we could gain from that. They might even begin to tell us some of their technique. Salvador Dali, for instance, who was a surrealist, which means he painted dream images, he had a technique whereby he would sit in a chair holding a key over a brass plate, and he would be drifting off to sleep, having a little afternoon nap. As soon as his hands relaxed enough to drop the key, it would hit the plate, waking him up, and he deliberately cultivated this state between sleep and wake where he could come up with these ideas for his paintings. And so if you're a surrealist, you might say, well, that's something I might want to try. Thank you, Salvador Dali. But then there's this opportunity where the artist invites us outside of the surface and external and into the inner processes. Now, it's very rare, actually, that an artist or, you know, a human of any sort, but it's rare. Some people can do their art and do it well. Some people can teach the art. And then there's a third class of self-reflective people who can tell you what's going on as they create. And so, and this I'm just, you know, completely making this up as I go, what this might feel like for an artist. But they might say, you know, some days I just know something's building and it sort of starts down here. And it's maybe a taste, maybe a smell, maybe a sound. It's very vague. It's not an idea. But I know it's there, and so I've learned to pay attention to that. And it guides me sort of towards... it might remind me of my grandfather. And following that train of thought, I'm reminded of horses, and then I begin to get this kind of vague general idea of a painting, and now it's moving up and out of my... It's beginning to take flesh, but it's still inchoate, right? It's inarticulate. And then gradually, it begins to take shape and form, and maybe a sketch or whatever, right? This is what... Anyway, you could learn a whole lot from that, I think. Because now you are looking inside yourself, and you're saying, do I have these same sort of feelings? Oh, I always ignored that kind of... I always thought it was the pizza I ate. Oh, maybe it's a creative impulse. So we can pay attention and begin to potentially learn about our own craft. And this is what we have in this psalm. We have in the psalm David, who is a man after God's own heart. We don't just have a record of his prayer like we do in many of the Psalms. We don't just have him describing his desires or his relationship with God, but we get this picture of what it looked like. And so we could imagine David saying, if you want to know how I got to where I am, how it was, what it was that God pointed to when he said that I was a man after my own heart, after his own heart. You may remember that David is not a particularly nice guy. He doesn't have a great track record. His family life is in the toilet. His arrogance and pride brought a plague and a curse down upon his people, his nation. Thousands died. So we know that David isn't blessed and recommended by God because of David's ability to be a good person or because of his innate natural tendencies. And so David might say, and this is verse 8 in Psalm 27, when you said to me, seek my face, my heart said to thee, thy face, O Lord, Yahweh, I will seek. And David he's not describing something. I mean, he is describing something. But I think he's led us into his inner workings. And we heard earlier in the psalm that David says, there's one thing that I've desired of the Lord, and that I will seek after, that I might dwell in the house of the Lord forever. To gaze upon his beauty, upon his delightfulness, and to inquire in his temple. And again, David's letting us into his heart and mind as he is engaging God and responding to God. Now, in the process of preparing, so I think this is great. Like, this is an advantage we have, because we may not all be aspiring painters. We all are aspiring persons who follow after God. Most of us would love to know that God has said up there in heaven, you know, nudge somebody, hey, have you seen my servant, like he does about Job? Have you seen my servant, Oz? A man after my own heart. Wouldn't that be thrilling? Wouldn't that be thrilling? Instead of him going like, oh, goodness, no, don't look over there. Gosh, what is that? Which, you know, some of us are pretty sure he's doing. As I was preparing the sermon today, I brought back and back to this psalm because I remembered that when I was a young man, just out of high school, I finished high school pretty much a wreck as a human. And after a year, I ended up at Cape and Ray out on the coast, Thetis Island, Cape and Ray Bible School. It's a one-year kind of extended summer camp, essentially. You come, you learn, you live in community. You have Bible teaching informally, more like sermons than like lectures or classroom activities. A year and a half later, I was back at Cape and Ray because I hit bottom again that year between the two Cape and Ray experiences, and I was back to learn again or new and to begin as for sure to follow God that time. Somewhere in that time, the year and a half, 2 years there, this psalm was something that captured my imagination, and I don't know why. It did, but I remember, and this came back to me, just reading this and just knowing that this was true for me. Two things are true. First, that God said, seek my heart, and my heart said, yes, I'm going to seek you. Yes, I will seek you. I didn't have to think about it. I didn't plan it. I didn't want it. I was very committed to a compromise so that I got to run my life and didn't alienate God too badly so that I didn't get caught in the end. I wasn't planning to follow, to seek God. The second thing was this idea of the beauty of God or his delightfulness. I don't know where this comes from. It's certainly not the picture of God if you had pushed me when I was 17, 18, 19, 20. My picture of God had nothing to do with delightfulness or beauty. But I remember this being a prayer, reading these psalms and just saying, yes, that's the thing I long for, I desire, is just to dwell in the house of the Lord forever, to gaze on his loveliness, on his beauty, on his delightfulness, to inquire of the Lord in his temple. Now, the reason I mention this is because as I was sort of reflecting this week and preparing, I realized that and maybe you've noticed this yourself, when you tell your own story, there's several ways you can tell your story. And sometimes, God be willing and gracious, we relearn our stories because we may have had a story that was centered around some fault or some hurt or some wound, and we've been characterized and dominated by that our whole life. And we tell our stories and we're like, yeah, well, you need to understand this or this or this, and we live in the legacy of that event. And then sometimes by God's mercy, a light shines on that event and we realize a couple things. For me, it was my own culpability, the fact that I had asked for that I was guilty. And when I confessed my guilt and found forgiveness, the intensity and the strength and the momentous nature of that event just began to dissipate. And I was free then to begin to be a new person, a different person, and to tell a new story about myself. Well, this wasn't quite as radical, this realization, but I have to let you know this, and because it comes out in my preaching sometimes and probably in how I interact with you, and that is that I can certainly tell a story about myself that is a story about a man who pulled himself up by his own bootstraps. But a man who worked hard, and sometimes I tell you folks, you need to get going. Get off your hiney and get moving. I say that sometimes, right? You know that. I say that sometimes. But I'm here to tell you that I was reminded this week that if I had not heard God say, seek my face, and if I had not desired the delightfulness and the beauty of God, then I would not be who I am today, and I would not be where I am today. And all my hard work would have just made me more arrogant and more ignorant than I was previously. You all know people like that, I'm sure. So there's something about this encounter with God. As a young man, I didn't ask it, earn it, expect it. When God just said to me, Lorenzen, seek my face. And everything in me just said, yes. Yes, Lord, I'll seek your face. It wasn't pretty. Things didn't get all good all of a sudden. It's been a really crazy ride some of the time. But the beauty of God has continued to be a goal and a telos, something that lures me and guides me. And this seeking his face has looked different ways, different times. The one thing that it's always meant is this, folks, that you use your discretionary time. You know what discretionary time is? When you're not sleeping, working, sitting on the toilet, eating. Most of us have at least an hour. Some of us has tremendous amounts of discretionary time in our day. That we use our discretionary time to seek God. But for me, it looked many ways. First, it looked like study of Scripture. And I remember reading that in the same period of time, reading and rereading and reading 1 Corinthians 1, 2, 3, and 4. Because there was so much life there for me. And I would just read slowly and I'd savor it and I'd soak. I would just suck on whatever it was that God had for me there. And I'll go back to it the next night or the next time I had opportunity to read. It also looked like this. It looked like walks in the nature, running out in nature, praying at the top of my lungs, running out across the prairies somewhere. It looked like sitting for hours and hours watching a sunset. You know an Alberta sunset lasts 4 or 5 hours? In the summer, not in the winter. It's a little quicker in the winter. And I found a little abandoned granary, and I'd go up and climb up on the roof, and I would just sit there. And the sun would begin to set, and it would set, and it would move all the way around, 360 degrees, and I could see it all the way around. And it would change colors, and I would just pray, and I would listen, and I would sing, and I was just seeking God. And then it looked like study, and then it looked like getting my life together and becoming a respectable citizen, etc., etc. It looked like many things, and sometimes I lost sight of it. But I'm here today to testify to you that the beauty of God continues to draw me. His delightfulness. And it's my hope and prayer that that resonates at some level with you. Because hard work, discipline, as important as they are, only gets you so far. Pray with me. May it be so, God, that we would hear, have ears to hear, hearts to respond, eyes to see. Remind us of your call in our life and on our life, not a call to duty to do, but to be, to come, to seek you. Show us your beauty anew. draws into your heart, O heart of my own heart. Amen.